Sponsored by 1010 Podcasts.
Welcome to episode 18 of the Celtic Exchange. This is Tino, and today I'm joined by Miff and Chris. So, any faint hopes we all had of salvaging something from this bonfire of a season were finally put to rest this weekend as Celtic gave up the Scottish Cup with as weak a display as we've seen all season. And that's quite the statement, given some of the nonsense we've all witnessed. Odson Edward and co seem to be halfway out the door already, and guys like Patrick Klamala and Shane Duffy now also look to have played their last games for the club. Heading the other way is new chief exec Don Mackay, who begins his work with the club this week, and we can only hope that the man's a grafter, as he's got a hell of a lot of work to be getting on with. Miff, what's your headlines from Ibrox, and where do you see us going from here?
Hello, Tino. Hello, Chris. Hello, listeners. Headlines from Ibrox, there are none, I would say. I'd like to just move swiftly on. It was pretty painful, and as abject as we were at times in the game, and as gutless as we were in the game, we still probably should have came away with something, which is quite strange. You know, that there are better Celtic teams than that went to Ibrox and performed more poorly or created less chances, should I say. So pretty galling in that regard, just the whole the whole escapade on the back of what's been a terrible season. Where do we go from here? Well, I think that there are reasons to be optimistic, because we've got a blank canvas. New chief executive coming in, hopefully full of bright ideas, although at the time of recording, we've not really heard too much from him, so I wouldn't have minded hearing some sort of upbeat bulletin today, but maybe that's just me. Well, we go up, we go back up, we go back to where we should be, back to at least competing for the title, competing for trophies and not meekly surrendering to the opposition.
Yeah. Chris, before we move on to yourself, birthday wishes for yesterday, first of all.
Happy birthday, son.
Was it the birthday you were hoping for?
Absolutely not. Obviously, the birthday wishes didn't come true. Shouldn't have been actually been saying that again. That's when they don't come true. Good day, apart from the game. But I'm just a wee bit disappointed, obviously, between 3 and 5 o'clock yesterday. But it was a sore one to take. It's story of our season. Bad goals, no converting our chances. I just think we just need to dust ourselves down again and just go on with it. But as I said, your man Don Mackay's got a big job in his hands now, and it's all eyes on him, in order to hopefully get the white smoke maybe come from Parkhead the next couple of weeks in terms of managerial appointments, director of football, etc. So I just need to go on with it again. It's just another sore one, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's all you can do, as you say, just need to go on with it, and we'll definitely be covering Don Mackay and his to-do list pretty soon. First of all, though, we'll look back, unfortunately, at yesterday's performance and result at Ibrox. I mean, the opening question would be, as you mentioned, Chris, you know, individual errors, not converting at the other end of the pitch. You know, can we lay the blame for yesterday solely on things like that? Or is it actually more deep-rooted, and is it a problem that's been festering all season within the camp? You know, we've mentioned before there might be some things going on that we've not heard about, but there's just such a negative air about the club and such a malaise. Do you feel, Miff, there's something more to it, or is it just, you know, poor on the day?
I think something's happened. I can't just accept that they've completely crumbled under solely the pressure of the 10. I may be wrong, but that's just my own personal opinion. The most unacceptable thing for me about the game against Rangers was, I think we saw a Celtic team with 11 players and even including the substitutes that were made, kind of feeling sorry for themselves because things hadn't gone their way. It was just all a bit gutless. You know, the endeavour was there from some more than others, and then the endeavour was maybe even there from some who are just not up to the required standard. You know, there's loads of different threads runs through it. But I think they all feel a bit sorry for themselves with the way the seasons went, and I think you kind of saw that for them yesterday, even some of the body language throughout the game, oh, here we go again, you know, that type of thing. You're really needing players that can stand up to the heat and take the game by the scruff of the neck. So, you know, a lot's been said, and a lot of conjecture on this podcast over the past few months and weeks about, oh no, who do we keep? And really, do you want to keep any of them at the minute? That might be a knee-jerk reaction, but in all seriousness, you're talking about who could be at the door, who could be there, who couldn't be there. It gets back to the thing I said just at the opening there about the blank canvas. I actually find that quite exciting. Instead of going out and recruiting loanees who can't get a game for their parent clubs, we actually go out and we find hungry, bright, young talent or established talent that want to come in and do well for Celtic on a permanent basis. To me, that alone is a step in the right direction, rather than the model that has been followed for the past few years, admittedly, at the fans' behest, where it's just been all about the 10 and fed into just doing enough to get over the line for the 10. Now we have proper time to do some decent forward planning, but it all goes back to this appointment needing to be made ASAP to allow whoever's coming in to do that work.
Yeah, I think forward planning is absolutely a must, and I think that's actually, with the benefit of hindsight, where we've fallen down, because we've not planned for season 2022, 2023, 2024, we've planned for this season, which has gone horrendously wrong. And there's so many things that have gone wrong, whether it be how we've dealt with COVID situations and Dubai's and signings and not letting guys go, and you know, the list goes on. But there's clearly been such a focus on the 10, and it's taken the focus away from everything else. Even at that, so we're in this inverted commas 10 in a row season, which has obviously been a failure. And you look at the starting 11 from yesterday, and there's three guys that are loanees, which, you know, I'm not sure that should be the case. Two of them, your fullbacks, who were terrible yesterday. John Joe Kenny, and it's, you know, it's almost, you almost can't blame him. He'll go where he's told to go. He's been told to go to Celtic. Why are Celtic considering him as the best viable alternative to a Frimpong or an El Hamid that moved on? He has been shocking, and somebody somewhere has scouted him and said he's good enough for Celtic. So somebody's, you know, got to carry the can for that.
I think the warning sign for me would have been he's got three first names.
Surely
you think to yourself, that's at least too many.
So that's a concern. Not the name stuff, the ability stuff. Laxalt has been such a puzzling signing. A guy that plays for AC Milan in Uruguay, but his performances don't reflect that. Moyel Younoussi is good when he decides to be good, and I think he has a talented guy who may well come good under a better coach, but ultimately he's a loanee at this moment in time. Brown has got half a foot out the door. Scott Bain was a third choice, who's now a first choice. Callum McGregor hasn't kicked a ball this whole season. There's so many things wrong. And ultimately, even when you look towards the bench, and I know we've joked a wee bit and stuff, I'm not singling this guy out, but Tony Ralston shouldn't be in our 10 in a row squad. He's on the bench, you know, almost every game just now. And how has it come to be that Tony Ralston is still part of the picture? Klamala's a 3.5 million flop who's currently in NYC. Duffy, nowhere to be seen. It's just a shambles. The squad management, you've got the young boy Montgomery in the bench. It's an absolute riot in terms of what we're looking at, and that's the best that we can put out in a must-win cup game against Rangers in the 10 in a row season. I mean, what do you feel about the current squad, Chris, and where it's at?
I just think, just for moving on from what Miff was saying in terms of being excited about it before just going on to that point, you know, is that my concern is that, again, I think that is exciting. Miff, I've just got to say, as exciting, but at the same
There is a but.
It's time. It's time, right? Again, I just wanted just to pick up on that, Miff. It's just, this needs to happen yesterday type stuff, and actually the appointment itself. But getting back to the team as it stands at the moment, I feel as if we're a team of individuals, complete individuals. There is no cohesion to our play, right? And I thought the past couple of games leading up to the game yesterday, I thought, for the first time this season, there is thinking there. That again, El Younoussi and Edouard are linking up well. There seems to be a bit of cohesion in the middle of the park as well. But yesterday, it was frighteningly bad in terms of...
I'm glad you said frightening and not close.
But you're using John Joe Kenny as an example as well, right? There's opportunities of him getting down the right-hand side. Acres of space coming inside, no really knowing what to do, didn't know what his role was. Same relax out on the opposite side. Callum McGregor for the first goal,
yep,
running up to that part, running right through the centre, centre mid basically, conceding possession. See Callum McGregor 2 years ago, 3 years ago, that's never a part of his game. The ball retention, his ball retention was fantastic. See this season, right out of the window.
So that tells me, because we all know that Callum McGregor's a good player, we've seen it with our very own eyes, you know, you kind of tell me he's not got a good touch, he doesn't drive and find the right pass when he's on his game, and it tells me that it's a real mental problem at the club. And when you're playing Livingston last week, you know, no pressure, at home, easy days, 6-0, flying, could have been 10. Then you come into that game yesterday and there's pressure, and you know, you can argue how much pressure there is or isn't, you know, given the way the season's going. But rather than look forward to that game, because I think a lot of fans, and I definitely get drawn into that, I was optimistic about it. I thought we had the ability to go and, you know, see that game as here's a real opportunity despite the season that's gone past. We can actually still go and do something despite all the nonsense. And the players absolutely crumbled. And I made the point that I think when they scored their first goal after 10 minutes, the game was done. So what work are Celtic doing in this? Maybe isn't John Kennedy's department. What work are the club doing to prepare the guys psychologically for games? And the modern game has changed and sports science is everywhere. Have Celtic got someone in there working with the guys mentally? And if not, why not?
Well, I think they'd Mr. Lennon for the first half of the season. That was blood and thunder to get the guys ready for the game. I think psychologically the season's obviously took a heavy toll. I don't necessarily agree with the fact that the players crumbled as such. Whilst elements of the performance were particularly gutless, there were periods of the game they did dominate and should have scored in. Now, the general feeling is that if Rangers really had, if we had pegged Rangers back, the chances are that they would have probably turned the screw and went up the park and scored if they really, really had to. But that notwithstanding, Celtic had clear chances in that game to level it and to get themselves back in it, you know, depending on what times the chances were missed at. So I think you did see a team that's just scared its own shadow. That's how they look nervous. And it just makes me wonder and question, you know, is it a case of we need to be back in there? As in us, the fans. We need to be back in there. What reaction is there going to be to this team when we do go back in there? And is it maybe a good thing that the team, as we have known it, is going to be ripped up and a fresh team there for the fans to go back in and give back into? Because I think that's actually going to work out to be a good thing in the long run, other than maybe somebody like Scott Brown not getting the send-off that he would rightly deserve. You know, take this season out of the equation, Scott Brown's been an excellent servant to Celtic. I think just looking forward, you're looking at the future, you're looking at that blank canvas, you're looking at how we move forward as a club, but also how you restore faith in the team with the fans. I think that's kind of a good natural fit, if that makes sense, is that we'll be back in to support a fresh team, which is probably good given the baggage that there would have been because of the failures of this season.
Yeah, it'll definitely be a fresh team. It'll be almost unrecognisable, actually. You know, even, you know, again, looking back at the team from yesterday, how many of those guys that started yesterday will line up on our first European qualifier, for example? I'll give you a couple. Probably Stephen Welsh, probably David Turnbull, and that's me. I don't think there's many others that you can look at. Bain shouldn't be around. Your two fullbacks will go away back to their parent clubs. Ryan Christie probably won't be around. Who knows about Callum McGregor? I could go through the whole lot of them. And that's ridiculous. Of a starting 11 in your biggest game of the season, and you could only maybe, you know, hang your hat on two of them being there for your next biggest game around.
I would gladly, again, go with that again in terms of who you're talking about. So you're mentioning Ryan Christie, and I've took a deep breath. You wouldn't want to keep him there. So again, I'm throwing Edward, again, I'm being controversial, I throw Edward in there. Edward is completely checked out. So why would you want, you don't want some of that around your club? And again, I know we need to maximise, obviously, value for him. And again, he will play the rest of the season. Again, you're not going to drop him. Again, he's a sellable asset. I'm quite content, as I said, to rip it up and start again. But again, like many others, but it's not as simple as that. But
that's it. When you're dealing with multi-million-pound assets, yep, and you know it's not easy just to bring in a whole new dozen players. There's guys around that shouldn't be featured next season, but will, and that can't be a good thing, you know, in terms of whoever the manager is. On that note, so obviously there's been a lot of talk about John Kennedy, and whether John Kennedy would admit it in public or not, this has been his audition. I'm sure he was fully striving to do as well as he could in the cup and get as far as he could towards the end of the season unbeaten. That's not happened now, and I suppose it's wiped out any doubt of whether John Kennedy should be here or not next season. And I've backed him. I think he's a talented coach and a talented guy in general, and I think he will be a success elsewhere. But it's definitely time for a clean slate, isn't it? And it's, you know, whether it be in the dugout or on the park, the fans just need something else to support.
Well, I'd say last week it would be very like the Celtic board to appoint him if he went on a winning run at the end of the season and eliminated Rangers for the Scottish Cup. The fact that that's not happened, I think, completely kiboshes any chance that he had to have in the job. The one thing, two things I picked up from yesterday in terms of Kennedy's decisions and management was, one, lacks out over Taylor. Again, I'm not being Captain Hindsight here, it's just that was a complete 50-50 call, but he's came out in the wrong end of that, because not only was lacks out terrible in the first half, but Taylor actually played pretty well when he came on as well. He definitely improved the kind of solidity of the defence. But also, he made mention in his post-match interview about we didn't press the way we wanted to in the first 20 minutes, which I think is a damning indictment of his preparation of the team. Surely, you're going out there like, you know, Slaven Rottweiler's ready to press like a madman. Mm-hmm. When it's a cup tie away to your biggest rivals in a game you really need to win, why was there a lack of intensity in the pressing? Now, you could say maybe Kennedy was in there, maybe he did rip the tap off and get right in about them and say, come on, lads. But if he did, it's not worked. And the team have went out there and meekly kind of went through the motions in pressing, and it's took them to go a goal down before they've put a foothold in the game and actually started getting in Rangers' faces. So again, does that tell you either A, Kenny Desney actually getting through to the players, or B, it is this pool of players. They've got Lennon sacked and they've no turn up on the big day to back Kennedy.
I'm closer to B, because actually...
So you're backing your mate Kennedy? Is that what you're telling me here?
That's what I'm saying on this occasion.
I'm shocked at that.
Because I actually think if you'd brought a guy at the pub to do the team talk yesterday, those players should take the responsibility to say, it almost doesn't matter what this guy in the centre of the dressing room is telling us right now. This is a Scottish Cup tie against our biggest rivals and we're absolutely going out all guns blazing.
We should have got Big Sinky for that. That would have been good. I'd love to hear Big Sinky at 5-3 yesterday.
Big man's underrated. So that's the thing. So, you know, yeah, John Kennedy's message hasn't gone through. And, you know, you could argue, is John Kennedy not delivering that in the right way? But I actually feel, from what we've seen of this pool of players, because we've seen them, you know, turn out horrendous displays all season long, I think it's on them. And to an extent, they've got an easy run. You know, it's all been about Lenny for so much of this season. And now you've got people coming out. And Kennedy's part of the problem as well and all that stuff. What about the 11 guys you see week in, week out and everything they're doing? I'll tell you something, Miff, and I know you're laughing because of my passion defence of John Kennedy. John Kennedy's job as a coach, and anybody's job as a coach, is to set up a team to create chances. Now, if Odson Edward misses a penalty from 12 yards, what can John Kennedy do about that? If Moyo Unisi doesn't smack one first time when it comes across to him in the box, what can Kennedy do about that? Individual decision-making is what's killing Celtic, and I think a lot of it can be pointed towards the coach, but so much of it must go towards the players. Gaze your worst, Miff, because I can see you laughing.
No, there's obviously an element of truth to that, but with this bunch of players, that seems to have been an issue all season, more so defensively, that they've just been making those wrong calls. And they did it again yesterday. The two goals have came from really naive, weak, gutless defend. To expect Kennedy to rectify that in a number of games is probably fanciful, because it's really down to the components of the squad as to why the team have defended so poorly all season and their set-piece concession, etc. But I take your point, you know, had certain big-name players made better decisions yesterday, we wouldn't have conceded the two goals we did and we would have scored more than nil.
Yeah. I mean, we've had guys, you know, making poor decisions all season long. And what do? We bring in another man for Everton to make more decisions, as if we didn't have enough guys making the wrong calls.
Well, but the issue with that is, the squad management. Elhamed's away. We could probably do a podcast alone on the merits of that signing and how that ties in with how terrible our recruitment is. And Frimpong, so we've known that Frimpong's been going. We've banked a fairly decent amount of money for Frimpong, and none of that's been reinvested in the team. And that's the most galling thing, is that just seems to be a continual repeated pattern of banking cash on assets and it not being thoroughly and obviously reinvested in first team ready players. We keep on buying projects or guys who have previously been successful but had a bum move. And, you know, Ajeti's the one I'm thinking of the most here, where on paper it actually looks a decent signing. He has performed well for, I think it was Basel that he'd done really well at, and earned his move to West Ham. He's done nothing at West Ham and he's come up the road, and, you know, he looks like he probably needs a full season to get fit. Lad, it's just one of those ones where are those first team ready players? If you think it was the decision was between him and Ivan Toney, and you see Tony's contribution to Brentford this season, that make that just is a further boot in the chute.
So it's a point on the agenda. Ivan Toney is quoted now in the last 24 hours or so as saying he was actually in the building at Lennox Town, right? So the guy's obviously been willing to discuss, and he's been, you know, seriously considering coming to Celtic, and for whatever reason that's not going through. And I think we know the reason. Celtic will have penny pinched at some point and said, I know you want X, we're giving you X minus whatever. And Ivan Toney's decided that Brentford is a more appealing place for him to play football. I think the guy scored 29 goals and 10 assists in 40 appearances this season. As you say, my hindsight's a brilliant thing, but there is absolutely no doubt, and actually anyone that knows football should have seen that guy and thought, he can do a job for us, either in place of or alongside Odson Edward. And one of the biggest problems this season has been Edward's been undroppable, but not in the good way, not because he's on fire, but because there's no viable alternative. Klamala, as I say, is Ofsky. Ayeti, you've just mentioned, Miff, who done nothing at West Ham and has mirrored that in his time at Celtic. And Lee Griffiths, you just do not know what you're getting. So actually, despite how up and down Odson Edward has been, he's been the only option for us. And that in itself is a damning indictment of the recruitment across the board. Takes us nicely, I suppose, to Dominic Mackay and the amount of work he has on his plate in terms of, you know, he's initially shadowing Peter Lowell, I think, before taking over as chief exec in his own right in the next number of weeks. I mean, I don't know where to start, but Chris, what do you think is the most important thing, first and foremost, for him to be doing of the many, many tasks he's got?
Manager recruitment, director of football recruitment both at the same time. I still think there's been, well, I think it's quite clear there has been discussions in the background with regards to managerial appointments and director of football potential appointments as well. So the feedback has come, or the kind of word in the grapevine, is that Celtic seem to be very relaxed about the situation. So the guy...
I'm glad somebody's relaxed.
Well, I'm not going to sell, isn't me anyway. So I think that needs to be the priority. And it seems, I'd kind of be very surprised if there isn't something already happened or happening at the moment. So that's Dominic Mackay's kind of his priority at the moment. But it needs to happen. I keep saying it was yesterday.
You would seriously like to think there's stuff going on behind the scenes, but you just don't know. And the more silence we get, and that seems to be all that Celtic fans get fed, then the more concerning it is. So we're recording this on Monday, so Don Mackay's first day in the job was Monday. We'll give him the day to get his feet under the desk and all that stuff. You want to be hearing from him pretty soon, don't you? You know, with something, even if it's just a holding statement to say, I'm in the role, I know I've got a lot to do. You'll be hearing from us soon. The recruitment process is ongoing. I mean, I've noted, you know, his to-do list, and there's things that are missing on this, but wait to hear the amount of tasks he's got. Number one, appoint a head coach. Number two, a director of football. Number three, address the scouting department. He's got to manage player exits, you know, high profile or otherwise. He's got to deal with players whose contracts are running out, guys like Griffiths. You've got returning loanees, ball and goalies, whatever. You've got signings for next season to prepare you for Europe and the title challenge if we manage to do one this year. You've got season ticket pricing and what that's going to look like and what additional value, to use the term. You've got all sorts of things, and you've also ultimately got to rebuild the damage that's been done in terms of fan relations. Where do you even start with that? That's more job than one man can carry, surely.
Well, yes, but I think going back to what Chris said, making a couple of shrewd appointments takes a lot of that workload off you. So if you appoint the right person to be head coach, you appoint the right person to be a director of football and look after, that kind of takes care of the player transfer side of things, the player contract negotiation side of things. So I think it all feeds into the one thing. Celtic have had the feeling of being a wee bit rudderless, even whilst Neil Lennon was in charge, and you felt that there was a bit of loyalty to Lennon from Lowell and others in the board, which ultimately has really cost us this season. And I think that's why you're seeing a team with the attitude that they have at this moment in time, because it's all a wee bit like, you know, poor us, or what a shame this season's been. It's been one disaster after another. It has, but, you know, you can still go out there and kick a ball on the park. You still have that within your power to do something about it rather than feeling sorry for yourself. So the fans, all fans want to see is a winning Celtic team. I repeat that. I think I've made this point a couple of times so far. We want to see a winning Celtic team. What's going to get us a winning Celtic team? Firstly, a new manager coming in with fresh ideas to give us all something to believe in. If you get that, you build the momentum back up the other way again. That's how fickle football is. It's a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately business. You know, the likes of Scott Brooke, who would have thought this time last year that we could even possibly be sitting here slating the likes of Ryan Christie, slating the likes of Odson Edward, some people being thankful for the fact that Scott Brown's moving on. It's madness, but here we are. That's what football does. If you don't produce results, you open yourself to criticism. And this squad of players, whether you want to wait 100%, 50% or 25% of blame at the previous manager's door, this squad of players have underachieved. And when you underachieve, you get stick, you get flack, you need to deal with it and come back stronger. Now it's down to see who's up for the battle. And I think, as many people have said on social media, leave it to those who are willing. Now let's see who's willing.
I like that, Miff. That's quite good. That's quite inspirational there, Miff. I really like that. But just to kind of moving on for that, Miff.
Completely off the cuff.
That was good. I really like that. But just to kind of moving on for what you're saying there, Miff. The pillars of a good management structure is having the right appointments in place. I think that's where we've suffered. And I'm talking about the executive level at Celtic. Whether it be appointment of Lennon, whether it be appointment of Strachan, whether it be the appointment of the Chief Scout, that's where we've suffered. And this is where the Dominic Mackay needs to get it right. He needs to have that structure, as you're saying, Miff, in place in terms of director of football, head coach, in order actually to help him make the right decision. So he needs to get it right. But again, it's a big, big, big job. But again, that's what, again, you're going to be measuring your success, basically. So it doesn't matter if it's football or any other business. That's how it works. That's how a good management system works. You need to have the right team in place in order to actually facilitate you driving forward. So
you do. And you've said the point there. Dominic Mackay has to get it right, and you're correct. Does Dominic Mackay have carte blanche to make those calls, though? So if Dominic Mackay identifies Eddie Howe and David Webb, for example, these are the guys that are going to drive us forward, is it his call? Or does it ultimately come down to Dermot Desmond and folk of his ilk who say, I know what you're saying, Dom, but we're going this direction instead? Will we ever find out? You know, did Peter Lowell make the call on Brendan Rodgers? I don't think so. Did he make the call on Martin O'Neill back in the day? No, because he wasn't in the building, so that's a different story. But generally speaking, it's clear that at times Dermot Desmond has ruled with an iron fist and stepped in when he wants to. And is that going to be the case moving forward for a Dominic Mackay, or do we just need to wait and see how that plays out?
He needs to have the autonomy to make his own decisions. Dermot Desmond can't come in, and again, fair enough, again, it's worked out for Brendan Rodgers, right? Brilliant, great, fantastic appointment and great, great years. But Celtic, again, he needs to have the autonomy in order to actually kick on, because as I said, he can't come in and just choose when to then step away. There needs to be that kind of working together. Again, talk about cohesion in the team. I'm talking cohesion at executive level as well. He needs to know where the guy needs to know where he stands, basically. Yeah. So
you just wonder, and we'll never be privy to those conversations, but you've seen the pattern, you know, with Celtic boards in the last 20 years in that cycle, and it's things go well for a time, and then as soon as we hit a down curve, Dermot Desmond swoops in from the golf course and says, bang, there's Martin O'Neill, there's Brendan Rodgers, there's whatever. And in the other occasions where it seems that Peter Lowell's had the autonomy, we've ended up with Tony Mowbray's and various other flops along the way. So I just wonder what the remit is for Dominic Mackay.
Have you got to say Ronnie Dyler?
I've got mixed opinions on Ronnie Dyler. Harshly treated, that man, but I'm not going to, you know, there's a lot of revisionism going on at this moment in time, and he was not the right man for the job. But he also wasn't given the tools. So Celtic appoint Ronnie Dyler, and then Peter Lowell says, "Aye, but you're getting Joe Ingeberge on loan, and Tonev, and Wakaso, and all these names that we've all forgotten." So it's just been such a car crash, you know, over the years. Dominic Mackay should signal the start of a new era for Celtic, but you just hope it's a fresh alternative to what we've been served up before, because, you know, the chickens have all come home to roost this season, and we've seen how bad it can be.
Well, you mentioned earlier that you felt we were getting fed silence, and we are officially, but the most telling thing for me has been the fact that the Sun leaked the Howe reports. Mm-hmm. Now, that would suggest to me it's not came for the club. That would be my suggestion. I think that's probably came for Howe's representative. So I think we've reached out, spoke to him, and then they've leaked it, obviously trying their hand, so that if any English clubs were interested in him, it's probably stimulated a bit of chat at that end. But I genuinely think if it was going to be Howe, it would have been done by now. That's my own personal opinion.
Yeah.
So I know I've said that before. People listening might think this is a repeat, it's not. But I have said that before. I think it might even be somebody that we've not heard yet.
That was my line, Miff. A number of weeks ago I suggested that it could potentially be a name that none of us have heard before.
I think so.
I'm not so sure. I'm still going with the Eddie Howe route. I think Stephen McGowan, you know, well-quoted Scottish Daily Mail journalist and very much on the know at Celtic, he's quoted from last week, I think he was on Radio Clyde, saying that if he was down to his last tenor, he'd still put it on Eddie Howe being the man in the hot seat next year. And that's a pretty strong statement. And I think and hope that that's where we're headed. But time will tell, and we'll need to hear something from Dominic Mackay, you know, in the coming days to reassure us. My feeling was that they were going to let Sunday's game come and go, win, lose or draw, and just let the heat of that, you know, disperse and give John Kennedy room to prep his players, you know, without distraction. However, you know, the next 24 hours will tell me if I've been right in that or not. The suggestion is from certain others that this is when Fergal Harkin will be announced, with Eddie Howe to follow in the coming days. So who knows? But you know, as I've said all along, the more silence there is, the more guys like us just fill in the blanks and inevitably get it wrong.
Where do you hear these rumours? I've not heard.
I hear them
that.
For you, and you hear them for
no,
me.
No, I've not heard any of that.
The wonderful
Fergal Harkin.
Aye.
Really?
Wonderful world of Twitter.
Yeah, it's all there for you. But it's just, it's such a, as I say, the silence just causes so many, you know, blanks to be filled, rightly or wrongly, by folk like ourselves. And Twitter's a strange place at this moment in time, put it that way. Another thing that, you know, should be high up in the list for Dominic Mackay, just while we're on the subject, is improved communication. And that's something that's been seriously lacking in, you know, certainly this season alone, if not further behind. And the only time we hear from chief execs or Dermot Desmond's or chairman is when they're firefighting. They're coming out to, you know, appeal to the fans for calm and bear with us, and this has just been a blip on the radar and all that kind of stuff. But you want to hear from these guys at the top of tree, the top of the tree, you know, hail, rain or shine. You want to hear from them at good and bad times. Do you think, given he's got a communications background, this is something we'll see more of from Dominic Mackay?
I'd like to think so. Again, it all just depends on how successful the team's been in the park. That seems to be the measurement that fans tolerance about the club have to say in an official capacity. It really just depends on what the team are doing on the pitch. And we've seen for the announcements this week regarding the European Super League and the intention of the clubs who want to participate in that moving away, that, you know, it's really just a slap in the face to the fans of those clubs. It's less about the 45 or 60,000 fans that go through the turnstile. They're actually looking at the wider audience and the audiences that they can get further afield. And in many cases, it's a bit like that for big clubs like Celtic, where they only really appeal to you. When Celtic were winning on the pitch, nobody was really complaining about the fact that there was a Celtic-branded, you know, get your name on a Dairy Milk bar or whatever it was in the club shop, or they were wishing, you know, everybody that had ever played for Celtic a happy birthday. Those things aren't an issue. When you're not winning, they're a major, major issue. But every club's got the same dilemma. You know, your Twitter account, your Instagram account looks futile if you're not winning or you're not making the right decisions. That's where Celtic are right now. Everything was geared up, even the marketing around, you know, the new strip. Everything was around the 10. So the club itself built this and went along with the fans and whipping us and themselves into a frenzy. So when it all falls down, it's going to look fairly grim, and that's how it looks and that's how it feels just now. But we do have the chance to rebuild that and get the momentum back going the other way. And the quicker this appointment is made, the better.
You're right, Miff. I think, you know, the core objective for any football team is win games of football. And you're right, if Celtic are beating all and sundry and doing well in Europe, you couldn't care less what they're putting out on Twitter and how much they're charging for strips and season tickets and your Celtic slippers and everything else that you buy.
Happy birthday, Mo Johnson. No, I mean, we'd all be fine.
Well, nearly. But yeah, you're right. You know, if you're winning games of football, nothing else matters. But unfortunately, in this season of all seasons, Celtic haven't won a lot of games of football, and everything has been a nightmare in terms of what they've put out.
16 since October.
16 wins since October. I've seen something doing the rounds. I didn't know the stat. I should really have prepared for this podcast. 16 wins since October. And what about now? April the 19th. It's not great, is it?
It was good prepping on today's date, you know. Well done.
Yeah, well, I've got it right in front of me on a computer screen, but by the by. Just another bit of breaking news today. Obviously, Jose Mourinho has stepped away from his role at Spurs, I think, in response to this European Super League chat. Will we be welcoming him home anytime soon?
I wouldn't imagine so, no.
No. Should we ask the question of a guy like that? Would he even cross the radar of, you know, of those that are making those big decisions? Have you not forgiven him for Seville, Chris?
No, still a bit angry about him. Sore point when it comes to our Jose, but... I've seen a couple of noises on old social media today about Jose, but again, I think that's one we can well and truly forget about, just like Rafa.
I would only welcome him in if he was going to be the 100% shithouse Jose Mourinho. I don't want this kind of watered down version. If he was going to come in and noise it right up, then I'm in.
There was a suggestion from a good friend of mine that forgetting Jose Mourinho potentially coming to Celtic, does the Spurs vacancy attract Eddie Howe? Is it maybe a level above, or could that put the brakes? Because I think Eddie Howe, if he's weighing up Celtic v Crystal Palace v Newcastle, maybe Celtic come out on top in that argument. If Spurs come into the party, this is a whole different ballgame. Do you think Eddie Howe's considered for a job of that calibre?
Third favourite at the moment.
Is he?
I would say no, on the basis that I think they'll be looking for somebody from the elite level, considering their commitment to the European Super League. I don't think they would take a chance on someone who doesn't have credentials at that level. However, he's held in very high esteem down south, so it wouldn't be a complete shock to me, but I would say that Tottenham would be looking for someone of a... I would say somebody like Benitez, for example, would probably be more appealing.
Possibly. There's not a lot of those elite guys around, though, so it might be that they would like an elite, but they need to look into the next bracket if there's no one.
If only there was a manager down south that was well known for jumping ship. I can't really think AMD off the top
where
of my head.
Where is he in
the bench?
I've been censored for that before.
Where is he in the bench?
Second favourite.
So what's a few favourites for Spurs, just quickly?
Brendan Rodgers, Eddie Howe, Nuno Espirito Santo.
But here's one. What about Mr. Gerrard? No.
Media favourite. I don't know. I mean, it's such a funny one, and obviously Spurs are now heading in a different direction with the European Super League, but, you know, it's interesting to see whether that would have an impact on us or not. And I wonder, Eddie Howe himself obviously fancies himself at what he does. I wonder if he would feel that he's at that level, because the suggestion is that Arsenal considered him. The suggestion he was also in the conversations before Liverpool appointed Klopp, so he should also feel that he's capable of taking a Spurs job, because Spurs are perennial underachievers as well. I think the stats coming out, you know, there's a lot of noise about the European Super League, and there's teams in there that aren't even Champions League clubs at this moment in time, haven't won their own domestic league in over 60 years, have very little to show for it in terms of history, but all of a sudden are amongst Europe's elite. So, I don't know, it's a bit of a segue there, but could be interesting for Eddie Howe, and it could put the spanner on any sort of deal that we've potentially got at this moment in time. Back to football and matters. So, obviously, we would all just love to bring the shutters down in this season today and just pack up shop and we'll start again for next season. But we've still got four SPL fixtures to play. So we've got Aberdeen on Wednesday, Rangers away on the 2nd of May, St Johnstone at home 12th of May, and finishing the season with Hibs away on the 15th of May. What do you think the starting lineup's going to look like, Chris, in these kind of games? Where do we go?
I still think it's going to be pretty similar to what we're seeing at the moment. I think, as I said, I talk about player value. Again, you look at Odson Edouard, you'd want to maximise your value for a player like that. Ryan Christie's another one for me. He'll be in there. Chris Iyer, another one.
Just on that, so Edouard and Iyer are huge assets on Celtic's balance sheet at this moment in time. What if Edouard breaks his leg against St Johnson?
Game over.
Do you know what I mean? Do you put him in a shop window? Anyone that wants to sign Odson Edouard right now should know all about his capabilities, and they should have done their scouting a long time before now. So should Celtic, as much as he's let us down, and I think he has let us down, should they just wrap guys like him in iron cotton wool and just accept that they're Ofsky and just slot other guys in at centre-half and centre-forward? What would you do? And I wonder if John Kennedy's given free rein to make those calls. I wonder if somebody from up high is saying, can I play those guys now?
I think John Kennedy wants to get one football game, just let us all. Again, we all want to see Celtic win and do well, so I think what they're going to be doing, it's hard when you think about it, but I think it will be the strongest 11 that will go out there. And the players, again, this is Celtic, we're still talking about Celtic, and I know these decisions do come into the thinking, but sometimes when things are happening, but I don't think things are happening at the moment, if that makes sense. So I firmly believe is when the things are wrapped up, there going to be talks at that time in terms of where you're going. It's a difficult one. It really is a difficult one. But I firmly believe, again, it'll be the strongest Celtic team you see out there. And again, winning games in order to, all you can say is try to get a bit of momentum getting towards ending this season, then take it in next season. But no, I think John Kennedy will go with the strongest team that we've got.
It's been such a long time since Celtic had so little to play for and just such meaningless games, and four of them. I know the one at Ibrox, there's something to it in terms of trying to stop Rangers' run, but generally speaking, it's just four games we could all do without, innit?
Cheer up, Tino.
I feel sad, Miff. I'm all right. But the question for John Kennedy, so whether he starts with your Ayers and your Edwards or puts some, you know, kids into the team, and does he give a Yeti run? Does Barkas come out of hibernation and get a wee spell on the sticks? All these kind of things. Regardless of who the personnel is, what do those team talks look like? How do you motivate those guys? And I know John Kennedy, as an individual, wants to win every time he represents Celtic. But you're up at Pittodrie on Wednesday night. How do you get the guys up for that?
It's difficult. It's a hard one to try to G these guys up. But
it's been hard when there's something to play for. Yeah. How do you do it now when there's nothing to play for?
I think, again, we're talking in terms of you're trying to put your finger on what the issue was. Again, I read an article, but it's Cameron Harper.
Yep, he's away in New York.
He's obviously in New York now, and he's just thought about the mentality in the squad. Said Celtic's very cliquey at the moment. Again, there is just a wee cliques, and I don't know whether or not that's kind of just like something from that. So again, that's just again in terms of certain individuals at the club clicking together, and it's just difficult to even sometimes break the clique and then try to get somebody to perform. So again, it's difficult. It really is difficult for John Kennedy to try to even motivate or try to bring somebody out the clique. And
it must be hard for the young guys to try and break into that, and it must be intimidating actually as a kid up at Lennox Town to go and train with and you know, leaders and good guys as they are, you know, Brunies and Callum McGregor's, guys who are very, very well established international players, or at least have been, must be very hard for a 18, 19, 20-year-old to try and break into that. And you need a certain, there's one thing being a good player, you need a certain type of personality, don't you? Because if you're going to be timid in that environment, it's the cutthroat world of professional football and top level football. Cameron Harper, you know, I think he played those couple of games in January and he looked quite meek and timid for me. And he just looked like he maybe struggled with that spotlight. You've also seen guys like young Dembele hasn't been able to pull through. You know, the Oko Flexies and various other guys, young Henderson. Young guys aren't coming through at this moment in time. Is that something that's more deep-rooted as well? You know, is there maybe a, as you say, whether it's a clique or a mindset up at Lennox Town where the kids aren't been allowed to flourish?
Well, it's something we've spoken about before, where we feel that the investment that's been into Lennox Town and how heralded it's been, it's not really produced a consistent number of, you know, first team ready players over the years, albeit there has been some notable graduates from Lennox Town. But in terms of there being, I think COVID affects that to a degree, I suppose. You know, the team wouldn't be able to socialise as they would normally be, or they would normally be able to in normal times. So it's hard to say. It doesn't surprise me that somebody who's been willing to leave has had, you know, fairly negative things to say about the dressing room when they've obviously not made the impression that they would have hoped in time. But I think it is a concern that young talent doesn't seem to be breaking through and is also leaving the club at this time. I think it also just taps into the general negativity that there is around the club and no doubt around the squad as well. It's, you know, the season's been such a disappointment that disappointment will be getting felt all the way from board level all the way down to youth team players as well. You know, there's maybe even been some youth team players like the guys that you mentioned, Harper, Dembele, Oko Flex and those types of players, Henderson, who thought they might have been actually contributing within that squad this season towards the historic 10 in a row, but it's been the absolute opposite. They've been called upon at a time of huge pressure when not just one of them's been chucked in, but six or seven of them have been chucked in all at the one time. And really it's only been Stephen Welsh out of the whole bunch that stood up and been counted. And regardless of what was a fairly terrible miss yesterday, himself and I have performed with credit as a partnership throughout. I think going back to yesterday, I could have been on the cover a bit better for the second goal, I think it was, where he could have went out to Aribo a bit quicker as well. But, you know, in general, Ayer and Welsh's performance as a unit have been fairly good. Yeah. So there's various issues at the club that need to be addressed. And I think we would all, as Celtic fans, like to see a clear pathway for youth players who are good enough to be getting into the first team squad and being given their chance as it stands at the minute. And I think because of the, shall we say, the obsession with the 10, any manager would have been less willing to do that. I know circumstances forced us to do it for two games this season, but any manager in the situation that Lennon was in would probably have been less willing to kind of do that this season.
You're not going to gamble with a 10 in a row by throwing a couple of kids in there. But I mean, this is something else. You know, I gave my to-do list for Dominic Mackay earlier on. Lennox Town and the academy wasn't even in that, and that's a huge undertaking, and there's a lot of, you know, finance involved in that. I think, I don't know where I got this exactly, but I think it's from the official website, but there's some stats here in terms of the academy and the players they've produced since 2000-2001. So just a few bullet points. 51 players have made Celtic's first team. Now, some of them will be guys that have played once and moved on. I don't know, Marcus Fraser being an example, perhaps, guys like that. 1 in 3 coming through the academy have become professional footballers, but not necessarily for Celtic. So again, Marcus Fraser would tick that box. 19 have played in the Champions League. I'd like to know who those 19 are. I wonder if somebody can tell us. And there's some kind of good analytics and stat guys that follow us on Twitter and different things and listen to the podcast. The 19, the obvious ones are, you know, the James Forrest, the Kieran Tierneys, the Callum McGregors, maybe Mikey Johnson. I wonder though, in fact, not sure of Johnson, but anyway, I wonder who the remaining 14, 15 are. So that's an interesting one. And then it says 41 have become full internationals. And again, I'd like to know that. But the bottom line is, of all those numbers, and those stats are great, but, you know, stats can do anything if you dress them up well enough. Fans don't really care about those four bullet points there. They care about who's the guy that's coming through and being a consistent first-team performer and not just a gesture. Ah, we gave that guy his debut and now look, I'm playing for Dunfermline or Hartlepool or whatever. You want to bring guys through who you can absolutely hang your hat on. And Forrest has been one of those. McGregor's been one of those, and Kieran Tierney absolutely has. But those lads aside, they're not coming through, are they? And something's gone wrong. And, you know, there's another kind of point that a couple of guys left Celtic's academy and went to Bayern Munich, and a couple of guys went down south. And I think ultimately, no matter how talented you are and how good the coaches up there are, it can come down to money. Bayern Munich will turn around to these kids at 15, 16 and say, I don't know what they're on, a couple of hundred quid, a few hundred quid, grand, whatever. and they'll double it and treble it and quadruple it, and Celtic can't and shouldn't try and live with that. So it's, you know, you've got to take into consideration the financial side of football in the modern day as well, that it is very hard to, you know, they've developed these players and now lost them for, I don't know if they even get a development fee for some of these kids. I think they lost a young goalie down to Liverpool maybe.
Yeah.
So there's loads of things like that going on, and I, you know, we can often get blinded by providing simplistic viewpoints on why we're not keeping those guys, why we're not, you know, developing Dembele. There's potentially a whole host of things that we don't know about, but the fact is that only three key players have come through the academy, the three I mentioned, since 2000. It's just not a great return, is it?
No, it's pretty poor, actually. I didn't appreciate it in terms of the stats himself, but...
You're welcome.
It's brilliant, you know, it's good like that. But I just feel as if, like, see you coming through, in terms of get through at a club like Celtic, you need talent, first and foremost. You need to have the right mentality, and also you need to have the right attitude as well. And this is where you, I think you see some of the players like Dembele, they suffer, because, again, they seem to have all the talent in the world, but again, in terms of the attitude. And again, I'm not meaning to be critical of the guy, but we've seen the same with Islam Feruz a number of years ago, and it seems as if history is repeating itself to a degree. But as I said, it just, you need, there's a three, again, three key things you need to become a player for Celtic.
And the other one that we seem to have missed out, who we had high hopes for this season, is Mikey Johnson. Now,
he's been very unlucky.
He had a bad injury, but then he came back just around the time when the whole Dubai thing kicked off, and he was in the team. But as soon as the other players come back, he kind of bombed at the squad almost. And for Kennedy's been out, I don't think he's featured in the matchday squad, has he?
He's not, but I believe he's been declared unfit. So I don't know if he's just not quite recovered. I've got high hopes for Mikey Johnson, and I think he is good enough to be a Celtic player, and I think he showed some real quality. But I think he's been very unlucky with injuries, and who knows if a new manager will take a chance on him. But this is a crossroads for guys like Mikey Johnson, and he could now go on and be that kind of fourth player we're seeking from the academy to go and make it big time. Or he could be like any one of the 40 internationals or whatever it is that just don't make it to Celtic. So hopefully, you know, it's the former, and guys like Mikey Johnson have got a future. So as we're starting to wrap things up, obviously covered quite a lot of, you know, different topics, and there's lots going on, and, you know, Don McKay being the focus, and rightfully so. But Miff, where are you at just now? What's your final thoughts as we start to wrap things up?
Final thoughts are just intrigued to hear what Don McKay's got to say, what his visions for the club are, what he sees as his most important kind of decisions to make in the next few weeks and months. Hopefully they're the same as what we as the fans feel. And I'm just really, really hoping that now the kind of tin lid's been put in the season, that we can move forward with a bit of optimism and make the right appointments as quickly as possible. However, I seem to have been saying that for weeks, and I'm just absolutely sick of it. So just hurry up and do something.
By weeks, do you mean months? I've also forgotten, we've talked about so many things that Don McKay has to do. We've not even discussed Shved. That's next week. We'll discuss Fed next week and see what to do with that character. Chris, what's your final thoughts?
Brighter days are on the way. I'm going to be optimistic, sign off being optimistic. It can't get any worse, so therefore I'm going to be optimistic. I think, as I said, let's just hope this is day one of the Dominic McKay era, on the 19th April 2021, and it's going to get better. So I'm being tribe optimistic. I'm being serious, but at the same time when I say that, I think things have reached a new low yesterday, and I've been out of a season of many lows. But I think, as I said, we need to just dust ourselves down. Let's just get the right appointments made, and let's kick on, and let's hopefully go in the right direction, hopefully sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And, you know, since you turned 40 yesterday, mate, you've been an absolute breath of fresh air, so very welcome. So as we've covered, Dominic McKay is now in the building, and his arrival signals the start of a new era for the football club. What that new era will look like, however, remains very unclear at this moment, both in terms of who'll be on the park and who'll be in the dugout. Our season officially ends on the 15th of May with a visit to Easter Road, but as a club, we simply can't afford to stand still until then. So it's over to you, Dom. We can only hope you make the calls that get us back to where we belong. My thanks to Miff and Chris for joining me on today's episode of the Celtic Exchange. And if you're enjoying the show, please support us by following and leaving a review on Apple, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. It really makes a big difference to what we do. Thanks as always for listening, and we'll see you again next week.
Sponsored by 1010 Podcasts.